welcome to On the Air with Glenn Coble, and my special guest is Jeff Seitz. I got it right that time. I keep trying to throw a K in there instead of a T. And Jeff is running for congressman of the U.S. congressman of the 4th District. And so far, he's the only person that has had the guts to step up against Jim Jordan, our interesting congressman that's covering for us now. That's kind of hard to say. Anyway, one of the things I'd like to talk to Jeff about is he was a former MP, and we have had so many problems with police, inappropriate police rules. I mean, they've been shooting, and it seems to be against African Americans the most. Also, we have had very little support by our Republicans in Congress and Senate for our the Metropolitan Police people of Washington, D.C., and also for the Capitol Police people. Tell me, how did that had to hurt you while that was going on?
Yeah, I mean, I support the men and women in blue. My nephew is a deputy sheriff. Well, he left Allen County to go down to Huber Heights, so he's a police officer down there now. I was a DOD police officer, so I'm familiar with, you know, patrol situations.
DOD police officer, is that an MP?
It's a civilian version of an MP.
Yeah,
Department of Defense.
Yeah.
So, so I went on there, and one of the stories I can relate to is US 27 goes through Fort Benning, Georgia, which is a major drug route, at least it was back in the day. And I pulled somebody over, and they always warned us about doors that are ajar. They used to hide shotguns in them.
Oh.
So as the police officer would come up, they'd fire the shotgun and take them out.
Yikes.
So I saw this. I put my hand on the door, told the occupant to stay in the vehicle. He kept pushing on the door. And this happened like two or three times. And he finally pushed open the door, and out came a very large African-American. Very large. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm 6'1". He dwarfed me.
Oh.
So knowing I'm out of radio range, I backed several steps up. I didn't draw my weapon. I just put my hand on my weapon. Immediately, the gentleman says, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." So we talked. I was at a distance. He didn't advance. I didn't advance, whatever. But we came to a consensus. So I pulled him over for speeding. But because he showed me respect, I let him go. Said, "Hey, just watch your speed, okay?" But we stood there on the side of the road, and we talked about things. Now, I can't remember where it was. It's supposedly the police officer was following the suspect, got in his car, had his back to the police officer, and the police officer fired at him because supposedly he had a knife. Shot him in the back. That police officer, in my eyes, my experience, should have backed away from the situation, still trying to maintain it, without firing and killing the man in front of his children. Mm-hmm. George Floyd. There was no reason for him to keep him down on the ground for that long. 9 minutes,
Well, how about that gentleman? I think it was Georgia again, where the African-American gentleman was pulled over by the police, and he started running away from him, and the guy emptied a revolver in his back.
Yeah.
Eight shots.
Yeah.
And he's running away.
Right.
I don't understand why.
There was probably no weapon in view.
He didn't have a weapon, if I recall correctly.
But again, I was talking to the Lima Police Department police chief, and the conundrum is we want more training for police officers, but we don't want to send along the money to train the police officers. And that's where, you know, the police chief was telling me this is the problem. They want us to train, and we want to train and become better, but we don't see the money coming along.
Yeah.
You know, and we can't hire people, so people are working overtime. That takes more money. So we have to fund the police, not defund the police. We have to fund them so they have the tools available to have better training, better situational awareness, better mental health things that they can give the police officer in traumatic situations where there is a shooting, or in domestic disputes. I mean, those are the most dangerous situations.
Right. Everybody's out of their skull then.
Right. Yeah. And even overseas, when I went to a domestic dispute, you're walking up the set of stairs. There's nowhere to hide if somebody pops out with a weapon. So it was very stressful. Mm-hmm. And I understand the stresses of being on patrol and trying to arrest somebody, pulling, felony stops in the middle of a major thoroughfare on Fort Benning, Georgia, and blocking traffic. You know, it's very stressful. We need to help them rather than, and I call on the police unions to rift those racists out of the police force. Because a majority of your police force cares about people. They want to help the community. They want to do a good job, and they want to go home to their families. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the way I stand on things.
I have yet to meet a police person and become friendly with a police person that I didn't like. Mm-hmm. Most of them are that I've met mm-hmm. are very concerned about the public and are very kind and good people.
Yes.
But there's always some bad ones. But I
well, there's always bad. There's bad apples anywhere. Take Jordan for example. You know, there's bad apple.
Yeah. Now, when I was running for office, I decided I was going to go to the sheriff here in town, not the sheriff himself, but some of his officers were interviewing for an endorsement, and so I told some of my Democratic friends, "Oh, I've been invited to go to this meeting." They all said to me, "There's no sense in you going. They won't vote for you." I said, "Well, if I tell them what I believe and we can work together, why wouldn't they vote for me and give mm-hmm. me the endorsement?" They just won't. Well, I didn't believe them. I went to the meeting. One of the people that was at the meeting was a friend of mine, still is. They didn't give me the endorsement, not even close. So as I'm leaving, I thought, well, I might get their endorsement. And then I find out they gave my opponent the endorsement. And she, quite frankly, she talks a good game. But anyway.
I'd like to get the endorsement of police agencies across the district. I won't be surprised if I don't.
Well,
but I'll still represent them.
I'm concerned. Why do the police not support Democratic candidates? What is in it?
Well, you see all the riots out west in like Portland, Seattle, and areas like that.
Yeah.
And then the constant riot of fear, fear, fear. They hate the police. They hate the police. They hate the police. And then that transfers to moderate candidates like myself or Biden, or people like that. It's just something that we have to fight through. We have to say, okay, I understand that you don't agree with me, but when I get elected, I'm still going to represent you, and I'm going to still do what I can for you.
Most of the African American people that I know, and I was in two or three of the Black Lives Matter demonstrations here in town, and I did talk to a couple of the people, but most of the African Americans that I have talked to about police, they give a good "I hate the cop" attitude, mm-hmm. but they don't hate the cop. They're afraid of the cop. And I think we got to find a way to get around being afraid. I think if they weren't afraid of a cop, they'd find out there are a lot of really good cops out there.
Yeah. I like the videos that I see every now and then. The cops get called out because some people are playing basketball in the road, and then the cop end up playing basketball with the people that he got called out mm-hmm. for. That's great. I think community policing like that goes a long way. And we've got our fair share of difficulties in Lima.
Sure. I'm sure you do.
We've had a couple of, questionable shootings, but I still support the police force there. I know one of the police policemen married my ex. Mm-hmm. So we talk from time to time, but good guy, soft-spoken, been a police officer for a majority of his life, so
I wrote a little paper. I write papers to myself. Nobody else reads them, but I wrote a little paper to myself about what I would do, what I think we should do with police support. I kind of thought the idea of having, and this would cost money, and that's the problem right there, having new cops, rookie cops, spend 1, 2, 3 years without a weapon. They would have a baton and maybe mace, but they would not have a lethal weapon on them. And have them be forced to walk a beat with a non-rookie cop, a guy that's been on the business in the business for a while. Now, I'm sure there are a lot of guys that have been cops for a long time that don't want to walk the beat. It's probably not such a great thing. But I think if we could get rookie cops and not give them a gun so that they feel real macho, but start to learn that there are people out here that trust me. And I think people will more trust a new cop if he doesn't have a gun on his waist. It scares me to death to see a brand new cop walking around with a gun, because what's he going to do with that? He doesn't know what he's doing. So.
Well, I think the training that some of the new police officers receive, I think is pretty adequate. They just have to remember about going through the steps of, you know, escalation.
They have to remember that.
Yeah, but in the heat of it, your mind is going everywhere. You're worried about your safety. You're worried about the safety of your partner. You're worried about all kinds of things, and it's difficult.
I watched a show on I can't remember what it was on, but it was like, well, it was like 60 minutes, but it wasn't 60 minutes. Where it might have been 60 minutes, where they took a group of people who had been trained on weapons into a classroom, and then a man burst in with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fake gun, a fake man, but he burst in with a gun and started shooting, and they all had weapons, and they all jumped to the floor, and after they went over it, the gentleman said, "You would have been dead, you would have been dead, you would have been dead." Nobody would have lived through it. I mean, some might have lived through it, but because you don't respond the way a person who's reading a textbook responds.
Yeah.
I can't honestly say that I've ever been put in a position where I thought somebody was going to kill me, even though I was in the Army. But not too many people want to shoot a musician in the Army. But I can imagine it's a lot different if you're in a situation where you may get shot.
Now, I've never been in that kind of situation. I think the entire time that I was an MP and a DOD police officer, I pulled my weapon once.
Okay.
You know, and so it's... And even over in Europe, we weren't even allowed to carry a magazine and a weapon because the 501st MPs kept shooting rounds off into the floorboards. So,
oh, jeez.
So they had to. We had to do that. So, which is, it wasn't a stressful, you know, post. It was a very small post. It was called Illesheim, Germany, Stork Barracks. So it was very, you know, low key, you know.
Well, now, how in the world did the British Bobby get by for centuries without carrying lethal weapons?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, it's the...
They still do. There are... They do have some police that have guns now. But they still... The Bobby on the beat doesn't have a gun. Has a nightstick.
I was getting ready to say, with a rookie on beat without a weapon, with... The way the United States is with gun violence and stuff, I think it's unrealistic to send a police officer out there without a weapon.
Well, he'd be with somebody that has a weapon. That's the way I was planning it. But
yeah,
I understand.
But you know, the gun violence out there, I think we all need to have a conversation about gun violence and how do we fix it. It's not necessarily taking the weapons away. It's just how do we keep guns out of criminal hands. How do we keep them from going into schools, going into shopping centers, theaters, whatever it may be? But we can't just stick our heads in the sand and think it's going to go away.
Do you think if we went back to the time where you weren't allowed to carry a military-grade weapon, like an M16 or whatever, what are the the new
it's
ones.
It's the AR-15.
AR-15s. Yeah. If we took those away from people, there is no reason to have one of those. If you kill a deer with that, you got a messy deer is what you got.
Yeah, if you have to use a 30-round magazine to take down a deer, you need to go back to the range.
So don't you think cutting back on the size of the magazines and maybe saying, yeah, you can have rifles. I don't mind somebody hunting, but there's no need to have an AR-15. I've seen what it does to the inside of those animals, and that's going to taint that meat pretty badly, I think.
Yeah, I think it's all about the appearance of the weapon. It's cool looking.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure that's what it is.
But you also have the AR-15 takes a 5.56 millimeter round, which is the same round that a Mini 14 takes, a 223 round. But the 223 isn't cool looking. You know, it's just a regular rifle. So I think part of it is it's cool looking. You know?
Could they not legislate the speed at which the bullet leaves the muzzle? I think they can do that.
That I couldn't tell you. I mean, I used to fix, you know, M16s and the M60s in the military. I don't know if you can do that. Okay. I don't have that knowledge, but I know what that round will do once it's fired.
Well, when I was in the basic training, they trained us first on an M1. Which is really a pain in the butt to carry around. But we were in the transition because Vietnam was going on. We were in the transition to the M16, and it was fun to fire the M16, especially on automatic.
There's not much to a kick to it. So.
No kick at all, except I'll tell you this story. I've got to make sure I still have plenty of time. We had a young man. His name was Klarski. I've written this a play about Klarski. Not a real bright young man from Chicago. Became a friend of mine because he helped me out in I was the platoon leader in basic training, and they were having a party for me one night. They were going to beat the crap out of me is what they're going to do because they didn't like that I was helping the drill sergeant. I was told to help the drill sergeant. Yeah. But anyway, Klarski was not real smart. But we were learning how to fire the M16, and Drill Sergeant Sims said he pulled four or five of us up, three, and he pulled me because I was the platoon leader, and he said, okay, you're going to fire the M16, and you're going to fire it from your groin. And I said, I'm going to fire it from my groin. It won't kick. Just pull it in snug and fire, and you won't feel anything. Mm-hmm. And then he told the next guy to fire it from his shoulder, and he told Klarski to fire it from his chin. And he told all three of us, just snug it up before you pull the trigger, and you won't feel anything. Well, Klarski, I fired it. Didn't feel anything. The guy that fired it from his shoulder didn't feel anything. Klarski pulled it real tight against his chin, and just before he pulled the trigger, he moved it away, and it knocked the crap out of him. It knocked him down on the ground, and I think it broke his lip or something like that, but he did a lot of things like
that. Yeah. We had some fun with stuff in the Army. So. But
we used to shoot him. You remember when we were training the quick kill method where you fired a BB gun? Well, we did, anyway, back in the 60s. And everybody shot Klarski with their BB guns. It was not good.
You know, I always say we know that the Second Amendment of the Constitution is the law of the land. It's not going to go away.
But it's the interpretation of it.
It's the interpretation, yes. And there's a Federalist paper out there from Alexander Hamilton, I believe, 23, I think it is. And it talks about a well-regulated militia.
Right.
And how it goes on to, it was placed in the Constitution because the nation did not have a standing army the time. Mm-hmm. And so they need citizens to help protect the nation.
Isn't it what the National Guard is now?
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
But the National Guard didn't come around until, I think, after the Civil War.
Yeah, yeah.
So he goes on to talk how citizens who had weapons, because they were allowed to have weapons to help defend the nation, would come out and greet the Continental Army in whatever engagement they were in close to their towns.
Plus, they used them to get lunch on the table.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, they didn't have a Walmart or a Chiefs or whatever.
They had to go out and shoot their lunch.
Exactly. So it was put in there to help defend the nation. It wasn't put in there to help the citizens fend off the government. And
yeah.
The government, it went on to say, even the government knew that there was times that you had to regulate that to help protect the nation
from
the citizens. Well-regulated militia. Yeah. Militia is translated by definition as a person that knows the way of the military. So we get the NRA ever since, who was the actor that was? I can't remember.
You asked too quickly.
Charlton Heston.
Yeah, Charlton Heston.
It became politicized at that point.
You'll have to take the gun from my cold, dead hand. Yes,
yeah.
Go ahead.
And I've ran into many lifelong NRA people. They are like, this isn't my NRA.
Right.
You know.
I know a lot of NRA people that
yeah.
Actually are kind of appalled.
Yeah. So it's that sort of perversion of the Second Amendment that we see now.
Actually, didn't the NRA support the ban on the AR-15?
I don't know.
I believe they did.
I mean, even Reagan recognized that you had to have some sort of guns legislation.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, at least register people that own guns.
Yeah, now we see Texas, I think, is passed legislation that you don't even have to have a carry concealed.
You can walk down the street with a holster,
yeah.
And we can have high noon all over again.
Yeah, it's OK Corral all over
yeah.
again. But, you know, it's again, it's the law of the land. We have to figure out a way to protect our citizens from gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm after, is let's protect our citizens from gun violence. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, okay. Well, but still very supportive of our police.
Yes.
Even with all their wrinkles and mistakes.
Yeah, we're all flawed. We all,
well, know. Except for you and me.
You know, the fire department gets there and puts out the fire at the building next to it when the one on the left was the original fire, whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
But we all have flaws. It's just we have to help people overcome those flaws. That's the key.
Now, money does seem to be very important mm-hmm. in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Money for better fire people, money for mm-hmm. better nurses, money for better teachers, money mm-hmm. for better cops.
Right.
But we don't want to spend anything. We've got guys like the guy you're going to run against saying no federal money. That's too expensive. How are we going to do it with guys like Mr. Jordan?
How do you put a price on a human being's life?
Yeah, I don't think you can.
I don't think you can either. That's why we have to do what we can to help the police or help you know, workers that haven't had a pay raise since, what, 2009, I think it was?
Really?
The minimum wage?
Oh, yeah.
It
might have even been before that. $7.75 or
$7.50. Yeah, something like that. And I get hit with, well, I've worked here at this company for so many years. It's like, yeah, but how would you feel if you were working at a company that didn't give you cost of living raises or, you know, merit raises or something like that? They just said, you're getting minimum wage, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And you stay stagnant, but your price of housing keeps going up, and the food keeps going up, car prices keep going up, gas prices keep going up.
Even people like me who are on Social Security,
yeah.
We get a raise in every year.
Right. So now you have people still, you know, making $9 an hour or, you know, whatever it is now. But we see the pandemic has equalized kind of the field,
mm-hmm.
and now you start to see those wages start to go up.
It is interesting. I just read a thing where in the paper where it said that the average grocery worker now is making over $15 mm-hmm. an hour. That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
And I believe that the average food person is making over $15
yeah.
an hour. Now, that includes probably some very well-paid people.
Yeah. But I saw, I think it was somebody had mentioned, and I can't remember who, based off of inflation and everything, the person nowadays should be making about $15 an hour. Based off of the inflation from way back in 2009 to here, they should be making this amount of money to keep up with inflation, and they're not.
Yeah.
So then you have people that have to two jobs. So what happens with the kids in the house? They're latchkey kids,
yeah.
Which leads to kids going out and getting into trouble.
Yeah.
And then they come in contact with police and the justice system, and it just perpetuates the whole cycle. And so we have to get away from that, you know. Let's don't try and have people doing two jobs so they can be yeah. home with their family and put food on the table and sit down as a family around the table.
That would be nice. Yeah. Speaking of latchkey kids, I have to do this. Hi, buddy. You're okay. I just got a new puppy dog.
Uh-oh.
And this is the first day that he's been alone by himself. Mama went to take care of grandkids, and I'm over here. So I turned the radio on. So, buddy, if you're listening to me, don't scratch the door. Okay. He's my latchkey dog.
There you go.
He can't do too much damage, I don't think. He's a little Yorkie. We did have a dog that was a very big dog that ate a hole through the garage door so he could get out. That was not good. But anyway, all right. Now, let's talk again about how people can help you out in your campaign.
Well, we can go to sitesforcongress.com /donate to donate to the campaign. Or if you want to help volunteer, you can go to sitesforcongress.com/volunteer.
Now, being a political person, I get a lot of requests for $3, $5, $10. Mm-hmm. And my wife's in charge. And she's a communist, so she gives a lot of money out to Democratic people. But the problem that we've run into is so many people are asking us for how do you pick which people you give your $3 to, and does $3 really help?
Every little penny helps.
Yeah.
I've seen donations on our Act Blue account of $1.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Now, do you get point? And I know the answers to these because I went through it. But do you get points for getting a $1 donation extra? I mean,
I think it shows that people are interested in the campaign and give what they can.
So you can announce in your campaign, we had 4,000 people mm-hmm. donate.
Yeah.
Even though 3,000 only gave us a buck.
Yeah.
You don't have to say that.
Or five or, yeah. you know, whatever it is. I think we've had over 14,000 donations.
Fantastic.
So it's, I think, but it's a grassroots campaign.
Yeah.
We want, you know, we the people to donate to the campaign.
Now, this particular show can be broadcast worldwide. As a matter of fact, I think the farthest that we've had somebody listening to the show was Spain. Mm-hmm. So we have people that listen occasionally outside of the United States. There are people throughout the world that want to support Democratic candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a problem for outside people, outside the country, donating to your campaign?
Yeah, only citizens can donate.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So we just recently got a donation from New Zealand.
Ah.
And so we had to research and see, you know, try and get a contact with this person. And it turns out that they were still a citizen in the United States from New Jersey.
A dual citizenship or just?
I think he was just living abroad.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, that's great.
Yeah.
So. Yeah,
fantastic. Okay, and all of you New Zealanders that are listening, if you're American citizens, you can still donate to Jeff Seitz, all right? Well, now, what can people do other than money? Because that's what they always ask for. And I like to help my friends in politics, but I don't have any money being mm-hmm. on Social Security. What other things can we do?
We have to engage each other, you know, number one.
Okay, you're going to have to explain that.
Let's talk to each other.
Okay.
And what I'm talking about is we're not concerned too much with the MAGA crowd and the QAnon crowd. We know that they're solidly in the Republican corner, Trump corner.
35% of the population is going to be there. Right, okay.
What we see is like Liz Cheney.
Yeah.
We came out in support of Liz Cheney because she stood on her morals.
Yeah.
And she said, no, I am not part of this, especially the insurrection. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stand here And if I get excommunicated or, you know, whatever it was, so be it. Mm-hmm. And we said that is the true conservative Republican Party out there.
Yeah.
And that's who I want us to go talk to.
And there are good people in the Republican Party.
They are good people.
Yes.
They are good people. They are not the Rob Portman. Rob Portman is leaving, I bet you, because he says, this isn't my party anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we need to go out and talk to those people and say, hey, Jeff understands you. I think you should come take a look at him. And this is the same thing that President Obama did, is he engaged those Republicans and drew those people across to him to say, look, I'm after we the people. We're about we the people. The QAnon crowd, the Trump crowd, is only worried about themselves. Mm-hmm. Nobody else.
Now, are you available to go? I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. I assume you're available to go speak to any group of people that want you, right?
Yeah. If there's Democrats that have have Republican friends and they're open to it, I'll come to your house.
Yeah, fantastic.
Every little vote counts.
And especially if you can get a Republican vote to switch over. Yeah.
So if you get two, maybe you get four. Maybe you get four, you get eight. Yeah. You know, 16 and all that stuff. So, but we have to continue to talk to them. That's what we've lost.
Do you know how many votes you need to get to win?
I need to attract 15%.
15%.
So, because basically, the traditional Democrat in the Ohio 4th gets about 30 to 35%.
Yeah.
So if I can snag away 15%.
Over and above what we...
Yeah. Yeah. So that'll give me... I think that will give me enough votes to get past Jordan.
Yeah. Now, that's about where I was. Mm-hmm. You know, 30%, roughly around there.
And so we'll find those. And in like Shelby County, a majority of the county is independents. So now we have to go out and engage those independents and say, what do you want from your representative? How can I help you?
Is supposedly we're going to adjust our gerrymandering mm-hmm. this year. Is that going to help you, or is that just talking stuff because the Republicans are in charge?
Well, it's so up in the air. Mm-hmm. And I've been, you know, hit back at as you're lying to your donors about running against Jim Jordan. But if he gets gerrymandered away from, like, Allen County, where I live, mm-hmm. I'm following him because he needs to go away.
Yeah.
Because he's more of a divider than a uniter.
Well, and all you have to do is look at the map of your district mm-hmm. to know that something went on that was a little crazy. Folks, it looks like a duck. It has a bill. It quacks up on Lake Erie, and it goes all the way down to Urbana, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And that's where the tail is mm-hmm. flapping.
Yep.
And in between, there are lots of places that can't be more than 10 miles across.
No. well, Mercer County, which is the tail end, has three congressional districts in it.
Oh,
the Ohio 4th only has four precincts within that county.
Oh, geez.
Why did we need to do that?
Well, aren't there like 14 counties in
yes.
it? But they're just portions of the county.
Yeah, I think Mercer County, Lorain, Erie, Huron. I want to say Marion is kind of gerrymandered, but I'm not too sure about
I
that.
I think we do have a little section that's hammered out.
Right, right.
But I don't know where that would be and
so,
why
but,
it would be.
But the map I saw runs up the western side of Ohio, which is really farm country.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Which would make the
beautiful
Ohio
corn out there right now.
Yeah, yeah. Soybeans. And so it would make it a redder Ohio 4th.
Yeah.
So
well,
that's why it's important to talk to the farmers.
Yeah, it is important. Now, do you think do you have any idea if it's adjusted, where the adjustments might come? Or has that not even been talked about?
No, there's suspicion out there. We're going to lose a congressional, you know, seat, which I think
that's
since
what I heard,
Tim Ryan is running for Senate, I think they may just, you know, divvy up his precinct to do away with it. But then I've heard, you know, Southern Ohio may combine a couple because it's not a lot of population down there. But it's all speculation. It could be. I think they're just going to do the minimum amount of ungerrymandering the different counties from 3 to 2. which they're required by the Constitution now, and say, well, we did something. Okay. And, of course, we all know that Cup and Huffman are from Allen County. And Huffman took it upon himself to appoint himself the chairman.
Okay.
So, you know, there's little caveats. If nobody, if we don't have a majority from both sides, then they can kick it. I say let's postpone it. If we can't get everything finalized 2 years, I'd rather get it right for 8 than wrong for 10.
Has anybody ever thought about using county borders as the edges and not have more than one county in, you know, having...
That would be too logical.
Oh, okay.
I thought the same thing. We have 88 counties. Yeah. We have so many congressional seats. Let's divvy them up all next to each other.
Yeah.
And let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah.
But now the Republicans want to hold on to their power.
They want the duck.
They want the duck. Or as I'm calling it, the dragon. Because he Jordan just spews fire all the time.
It does look like a dragon as well. Audience, if you're listening and you want to see it, you got to pull up 4th District in Ohio and look at the shape of it. The bill is all the way up at Lake Erie. Lorraine, is it?
Lorraine.
Yeah, Lorraine. Yeah. And you can see the little bill and then the long neck, which divides all sorts of counties, and then the fatter part of
the body
of corn country. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. All right, well, so can somebody actually get out and help you canvas as well?
Yeah, you can go to the sitesforcongress.com/volunteer. We're actually, Facebook is Team Sites, I believe it is. Campaign manager set it up.
I looked it up this morning, but I don't remember what it was called.
This is a private group that we're having the volunteers go to, so we can organize things. There's postcards you can send out. There's all kinds of stuff.
Do you have enough people that like some of my skills are public relations? Mm-hmm. There are people who have skills in fundraising. There are people that have more hardcore skills. Mm-hmm. Do you need people like that?
The team is pretty well rounded out, but and we're still a ways out. I mean, we're, 15 months out? Yeah. So I don't think we're going to start really taking on people onto the campaign until next year sometime.
I assume all of the people that you do take on right now are volunteers.
Yeah, pretty much. It's, a lot of it is, we got the treasurer, fundraisers. Video guys. Have you seen the video?
No, I have not.
Oh, you haven't?
Okay, tell me where we can go to find the video.
Well, you could probably see it on my Facebook page. You can see it on the Twitter page. Once you pull it up, it's like the first post. But the night that we released it, I went to bed and I woke up in the middle of the night and it said, pick up your phone. And that's all it said. And I was like, what the heck's going on? It was an email. Well, Brian Williams from the 11th Hour had closed his program that night with our video.
Oh, fantastic.
And just gave me it was such a good, glowing, recommendation. I don't know if you call it that, but I was just flabbergasted that Brian Williams picked it up. I don't know. Perfect. I don't think the campaign did it. I think somebody at MSNBC saw it and said, hey, maybe you should, flip this out.
Well, I have a few people that I've met. Heidi Presbola contacted me when I was helping one of your opponents. And there are people that are interested in Ohio politics. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine. That's fantastic to have Brian Williams. He follows Lawrence O'Donnell, and he follows Maddow.
We're seeing a lot of traction across social media of not only regular people, but also other politicians coming on board and looking at what I'm doing. August 20th at 5:15 to 6:30.
That's when Trump's taking back over, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Don't get me started. August 20th. Don't get me started. I'm having a fundraising event online, a virtual fundraising event with Congressman Eric Swalwell.
Oh, very good. That's a great person to have in your corner.
Yeah, so if you want to get in on that, you know, you can go to the, I think it's on my website. You can donate to us, get in on the feed. If you hit a certain level, 250, you can get a book from Eric Swalwell. Mm-hmm. If you go 500, I think you can get a, you know, autograph of him.
Isn't the maximum level $2,700?
$2,900
$2,900.
Yeah. Okay. So that's going to be a fun event for me because it'll be kind of the first time I get to talk to a congressman.
And a very brilliant man at that.
Yeah.
And he's a lawyer too, I believe.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So it'll be a fun event for us. So if you want to get in on it, you can go.
Well, we're down to our final 2.5 minutes. So let's give the where the people can go to find out more about you online again.
Okay, so it's Twitter and Facebook, which is Sites for the letter 4 or the number 4.
Number 4.
Sites for Congress. You can get me there or sitesforcongressfor.com for my website.
Okay. And where are you appearing any place close in the near future?
I think the next event, if you're up near Huron, I'll be at the Huron County Fair on the 19th.
Okay.
We'll have the event online on the 20th. We're going to be in the Allen County Fair Parade this weekend. But I'll be out at the Allen County Fair if you're in Allen County.
You're going to come to the Popcorn Festival?
I can.
Okay.
I've never been there.
You ought to come. They claim 250,000 people attend it. So
yeah, I always saw it when I was younger, and it's like you have these big name entertainers come in. And I thought it was really cool, but I never made it over here.
Well, and we didn't have anybody last year because of COVID.
Yeah.
So this year, I'm guessing it's going to be a little bit larger.
Yeah. Just because I haven't seen any advertisements for it.
So. Well, I'm no longer involved with it. I was involved with it for 5 or 6 years. I'm no longer involved, but I'll try to make sure that the people that are involved get your name and how to get a hold of you.
So. Yeah, I love a good concert.
Yeah, I think it'd be good for you to get out and meet those people.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the Democratic Party here locally is going to have a booth, and I'll check on that too for you. And you could come and at least spend an hour there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're down to our last minute. Buddy, don't be scratching on the door. All right. That's my dog. We're down to the last 40 seconds, so I just want to thank Jeff Seitz, who has been my guest, and he's running for Congress in the 4th District here in Ohio, and we're encouraging you to look at his websites. Maybe you can help him out. And even if you aren't a Democrat and you're a Republican, check him out anyway. He may have some sensible things that you'd like to support him for. All right? All right. Well, have a great day, and thanks for tuning in to On the Air. I'm Glenn Coble, and we'll be back with Swap Shop in about 15 minutes. Bye-bye.